Instructional Designers in Offices Drinking Coffee is brought to you by Domino, makers of Domino One, the all-in-one cloud-based e-learning authoring tool for teams. You can learn more at domino.com. That's DOMINKNOW.com. Now, here's this week's episode.
There is the music.
It's been weeks since that song has been in my brain all day.
Oh, yes. Welcome to your idiotic earworm for the day.
No kidding.
Hey, everybody. How was your summer? Looks like we got some weather reports coming in the chat.
Yeah, Chris is noting in everything that it's already, the leaves are turning. That's just kind of... That's a scary thought. Frustrating.
Wow. Well, it is September 1st, so that means summer's over, right?
Yeah, exactly. Thing done. Check it off the box. All done. Completed. Oh, my goodness. It's the first episode of our fifth season. A little bit of bragging. Season 4 saw us roll past 150 total episodes. And 100,000 downloads of the audio podcast so far in total. So we're celebrating a couple of really cool milestones that give us a little bit of goosebumpiness. We, ooh, you like us, you really like us. Anyway, but we have a great season 5 ahead. Lots of things planned, lots of great guests booked. And speaking of great guests, our Season 5, Episode 1 guest this week is Sarani Tamaraju. Sarani, give us a little introduction of yourself because folks haven't met you here before.
For sure. Hi, everyone. Good morning. I see a couple folks from London, so good evening. Thank you for joining us from all over the world, actually. So I'm Shravani. I work at Visa. Gosh, I've got to, go through my resume at some point. But... I've been at Visa for a couple of years. I've sort of moved around the last 3 years. I've been in learning. I've been in, I'm currently in product now. I had a short little gig in the risk operations team. So I guess I'm a little all over the place, but I love to do things that just sort of make me happy and be able to make an impact in my team. So that's work. Outside of work, I recently became a plant mom over the pandemic, so that's been really fun, but also nerve-wracking. My friends have called me out for being weird and talking to my plants, but I think that's how they're growing, so I'll stick to it. and then I'm just trying to, with the smoky situation out in California, I'm trying to be mindful of going outside, but also making sure that I'm controlling my sanity, not just staying indoors all the time.
Mm. Yeah. Well, your plants will help with your air quality indoors. So that's besides companionship, you get the 100% health benefits too. Yeah.
It's like my lungs are getting cleaner as soon as they wake up, thanks to my snake plant.
Very lovely. Very lovely. You're talking about feeling inside, staying inside, trying to balance that kind of, we've all been living that for several different reasons, depending on where you are for the last year or two. And part of that's basically the focus of today's conversation is some of the changes that that we've had to make in what we would traditionally have been doing pre-COVID, et cetera. And then adjusting to that. And you brought to us today an example of some of the things that you've done for one particular program at Visa. So maybe tell us a little bit about that to get us started.
For sure. So I was, responsible for onboarding for technology and operations. Over at Visa, it's about 10,000 employees and our company's 20,000. So it's really half the learning or half our company that we're creating an onboarding solution for, and we're a mighty team of four in the technology learning organization. So four people developing learning solutions for 10,000 people. So I'll kind of pause with that number there. And it's a, you know, the onboarding process is, you know, annual, but it also has this bell curve sort of structure to it where, you know, you have majority of the hires joining in the summer months or just after, and then people kind of floating in throughout the year as well. Now, this program specifically was intended for new college grads. So people right out of an undergrad degree or those who are, you know, undergrad and master's. And so they've pretty much got zero work experience, right? Especially in the payments industry, which is way more complicated than we intended to understand of it. So pre-pandemic, which seems forever ago at this point, it was a 5-day in-classroom session. So 8 to 5, 9 to 5 sort of thing. Very hands-on. I mean, we had them building out the payments ecosystem using Lego models. So that's how hands-on it was. We had people putting like videos together, you know, bringing out your TikTok and whatever it is. And so we ended up taking all of that into a virtual experience. How do you take a 5-day, you know, heavily, heavily engaging, collaborative sort of tabletop experience-based onboarding program virtually? So that was really the challenge at a baseline. Now, if you look at the numbers, it was a $1 million program. And what happens when you've got budget cuts, it goes down, right? Training is the first one to unfortunately get cut. And so we ended up going from $1 million to less than 50,000. I think March was when the pandemic hit. October, so it's about 6-7 months, was all we had to sort of turn around this program, make the same impact, make the same learner experience possible, reach the same objectives, right? So that was, that's how the pandemic was for me.
No kidding. Wow. Before we go into what you did for adjustment, let's just circle back, because you said Lego and my ears perked up, and I'm sure everybody in the chat did too. Maybe just tell us a little bit about that activity, just so we can get a picture in our mind on that.
Yeah. So I have to jump into the payments industry first, quick second.
Okay.
So you have several different places called the 4-5-party model, although that's sort of changing now, becoming more of a network-based model. So in the payments industry, you've essentially got your acquirer, you've got your issuer, you've got your merchant, you've got your consumer, and you've got Visa. So those are the 5 parties that we look at. Your issuer is the issuing bank, so a consumer's bank. Your acquirer is the merchant's bank. And then you've got the merchant themselves. Visa is sort of the payment rails on which all of these transactions are going through. And then you've got the cardholder. Now it's the consumer, because card is no longer just a plastic, right? So that's sort of the payments model. And so what we had our learners do in the classroom to even get them assimilated to who are the key players, how is my role in technology making an impact on one or any one of these key players? So we had little building block type Legos. We had a little gentleman Lego. We had a female Lego. And so we had them put all of this together and come up with a very creative story of how is this consumer's payment impacting these players in the ecosystem. And I mean, the stories that came out were just wild, right? Mm-hmm. It was just wild. So people had fun with it.
Yeah, something like freedom, or something like Lego, gives people a certain freedom to, you know, not feel quite as rigid, perhaps, or flex some creativity. Mm-hmm.
It kind of goes back to, you know, when you're growing up, you're playing with Legos, right? So you sort of instill that that sense of nostalgia in a classroom setting.
Mm-hmm. And it's also one of those things that's multi-generational. So, you know, even older, my generation, et cetera, it's a universal kind of a thing, as opposed
there's
to.
There's no age to Legos, right?
Exactly. There are other toys that become outdated or have moved on from fashion, but Lego has definitely got a staying power and a relevance across that kind of.
Totally.
That's very cool. That's very, very neat. So March 2020 comes along, and you're staring down this, you know, late summer, post-summer higher wave that you've got to deal with. Where did you and your team, you know, start with thinking of how you had to do things differently?
Let me actually take you on a journey of exactly what happened. I think it was March 9th was when, you know, we got the email from our executive saying, hey, there's this pandemic, like we're not really sure what's going to happen to it. We were actually mid-session of our learning program. We had a group of, I think, 50 people who had joined that day, and they were physically in the classroom. And this was a purely vendor-delivered program. You know, we made the payment, the class was going on, food was catered, got the email from our executives. It's sort of, okay, well, you know, do we take this seriously? I mean, how seriously do we take it? Excuse me, it's really the question, right? Do we stop the program right away? Or do we sort of just go through the day and then, you know, think about it on Wednesday or Thursday at the time? So it was a quick reconvene of myself, who was leading the program, my manager at the time, and the vendor lead, and very quick collaboration on what do we do, right? I mean, this is a week-long program. We don't want to damage the learner experience. And this is their onboarding. I mean, just imagine from a learner perspective, which is really what we do in a learning org. You think about every single step of the learner journey from the learner perspective. What is their onboarding going to look like if, you know, we have them sit in a class one day, the next day there's no session, and then the third day they're back or they're in a virtual. So it was just all of this confusion, as I'm sure everybody in the chat and who's joined us would have gone through a roller coaster of emotions, really. So how did we go about, you know, getting to this BILT, right? The fortunate thing at Visa is that not only our executives, but our middle managers are very keen on learning, especially for new hires, more specifically for new college grads, right? To sort of instill that camaraderie amongst themselves. And so it was almost an easy win to say, hey, managers of new hires, this is a situation we're in now. You've clearly seen the outcome of this program when it was a live classroom session. You've had your former employees go through it. Here's sort of what we're brainstorming. Think with us, right? Be our thought partners. And we're very blessed to have managers who sort of, you know, just shot at ideas of how long do we make this, how, you know, how often. So every day for a virtual live, or every other day, how long, couple of hours, full day. So it was really a sort of a group think on how do we redesign, keeping the objectives of the program, exactly the same. We don't touch those, but how do we tweak the learner engagement and experience to fit the platform that's allowed at Visa, right? We've got security issues, so we can't just use Zoom or Google Hangouts, unfortunately. We were limited to, I believe it was WebEx. We couldn't even use Teams because of the number of students that were joining us. And I think it might have been, I don't remember at this point, I apologize, but somebody said, you know what, we have a total of 300 new college grads joining globally. Why not we, you know, remove boundaries and get them all trained at the same time? It's like, well, here's an idea, right? You remove regional boundaries, but do we have the faculty to train 300 people at the same time on a virtual platform? That was a thinker. That was a huge thinker. But we did it. We did it anyway. We sort of rallied the troops, and we developed a very strong internal faculty program. And so they were sort of the champions for getting these regional hubs to sort of collaborate with us, making sure regional learning needs are met as well. We've got Visa Europe that has separate learning needs. We've got Bangalore campus, obviously the United States. And so how do we get them all trained on the overall concepts? But, you know, regional needs will be different. So how do we reach those goals? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's an interesting, I guess, you know, benefit or interesting development that you were able to sort of move from siloing to maybe breaking down some of those silos, too, as a way of this kind of a process. What happened next then?
It was really in the learning team. How do we get a group of people to train 300 people at once, redesign a program in 6-something months?
Oh, Sravani, you seem to have muted yourself. You just roll over your... roll over your video feed. There should be the mute button there. Brent, you don't have an option for that, do you?
Oops, I was trying to unmute it from my end, but I can't.
Ah. Yeah. Brent, you're really quiet now.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. Can you still hear us? I'm trying to, I'm getting a little bit of echo, so.
Okay.
I'm trying to ride my levels. This is weird. I'm not too sure why it's doing this. Hold on.
We'll see how, we'll see.
Can you hear me?
Yep.
Oh, there it goes.
Now.
Yep.
Good call on the refresh.
I'm not sure what happened.
Yeah, gremlins.
That's what it is.
No worries, no worries.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that. So yeah, I guess going back, it was really assembling that team, right? The core team of instructional designers, of learning product owners. But I think the most important, most critical people we had on the team were stakeholders, our hiring managers, our HR teams, our alumni of the program when we were doing this in a live format. And so one of the design mechanisms that we use. So I think maybe this would be a good time to do my screen share.
Sure, yeah. Walk us through some of those details. Awesome.
Yeah. It's a quick build, so we'll get through it pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Hold on.
And while you're doing that, Carlita's asked three questions in the chat, and I'll throw them out because they may weave into what you're about to walk us through here. But Carlita's asking, you know, if you can give some examples of regional differences. Her second question is, how many faculty were you using for the training? And then the broad question, you know, lessons learned from the experience, which I'm sure we're going to keep coming back to over and over again. But
totally. No, great set of questions. So in terms of regional differences, the big one was, in North America, we hire sort of a diverse set of job titles in the technology org. So you've got folks all the way from, you know, technical writers to software engineers to business analysts. However, in the Bangalore campus, they hire mostly like 90+% are purely software engineers.
Okay.
So they're much more technical. They need much more technical training, hands-on training, as do, you know, the technical writers or the business analysts, right? Even the tools they use are going to be different. Mm. So making sure we sort of cater to those specific requirements. I apologize. What was the second question?
Second question was how many faculty were involved in the training?
Let's see. For the 300, we had four in India and then three in North America. So seven.
Wow.
And these were simultaneous sessions. So, I mean, if we're going back to like the tools that we use, it was seven different WebEx links, right?
Right.
And I was sort of program managing all of those from the back end. So as soon as the North America sessions end, you do your lessons learned, feed that into the AP team, making sure that, you know, any minor tweaks, modifications, whether it's a video that's not working or something on the slides, you know, brought up a lot of questions. This was a discussion. And then sort of tweaking that so that the AP team has their content ready, taking their feedback, and the next day feeding it into the North America facilitators. So, and this is actually a really good transition because I'll sort of hop onto my slides to look at what was our method to the madness, right?
Sure.
So these were, and you guys can see my screen okay?
Yep, it's working fine okay. For me. Yep.
Cool.
Yeah, it looks good.
So we're all familiar with this at this point. We used Agile. It's sort of a very beautiful framework, really, to get everybody to pull equal weight, but also produce something at the end of every sprint, right? We had a dedicated product owner, a dedicated Scrum Master. Our Scrum team members, like I said, were that faculty, that internal faculty, and stakeholders that I mentioned were our hiring managers, alum, you know, several different leaders, even within the learning org. And so every 2 weeks, we had a really strong deliverable that we were able to produce from, I think it was end of March, all the way up until October 1st was when all these new hires had joined those 300. So we were able to sort of have that iterative deliverable process. this is also another framework that, that, you know, hopefully we're all familiar with, design thinking. The beautiful part about sort of merging these two is really bringing the stakeholders on across the design thinking process. So having them empathize with the learners, having them help define the problem statement or the design challenge, and really in the ideation phase, having them, I mean, the managers are really the ones who are on the floor sort of working with the new hires directly. And so they have certain expectations of, you know, at the L2, L3 Kirkpatrick levels, what are their learning outcomes supposed to be? What are their learning objectives supposed to be like? So making sure we're able to sort of feed those in as we were designing for this new virtual program. And then I'll talk to the prototype and test in a little bit. But so we use Agile, we use design thinking. This is something, the learning cluster model is actually something that's fairly new in the market in terms of learning frameworks. I unfortunately can't see the chat, but I'd be super curious to see if anybody's heard of it or if you've used it. This is something I've learned in a workshop a couple years ago, an ATD workshop, where it really talks about changing on the job behavior through learning experiences. And the really nice thing about it is sort of ties everything in with what they call strategic performance objectives. So those are those business goals that the learning program is trying to reach. So you've got your Agile process to kind of self-manage the working team. You've got design thinking to create a new learner experience. And then you've got the cluster model to sort of tie all of these together. And the last and most important thing, and I sort of alluded to this earlier, is having that internal faculty program, right? You have to have a robust faculty program, and especially those folks who are comfortable getting up in a virtual environment, but also who really advocate for the quality of learning that this experience would provide, especially for new hires, more specifically for new college grads, right? Because they are very hungry to sort of jump into their first job, start working, start making an impact, you know, writing code, committing code, sending it to production, whatnot. But it's like, you got to reel that back in, get them to understand the lay of the land, and then sort of slowly merge them into the experience that we have at Visa. So one of the key components of our program, which we called Step Up, was to have our learners actually develop a working prototype of a project. So in the live classroom, what we did is in those 5 days that they were with us, we sort of fed into them these strategic objectives, which not only lied in team building and communication, but also really understanding Visa's ecosystem, understanding the payments model, and at the last but not least, understanding the technologies that they'll be using, right? And so we use standard Java, C++. We had some folks use PySpark and whatnot. So really up to them to pick the technology. But at the end of the day, they're giving us a working they're really giving us a working prototype of a project that uses several of Visa's APIs. And I'll kind of pause there. Yeah, I feel like I've been talking a bit. I'll pause there.
Yeah, I mean, I tossed in a question in the chat to see if anybody has used the learning cluster model, and Brent followed up with a link to it. If it's new to me.
It's new to me too, and I don't even know if that's the right link or if it's the right people that maybe presented it to you. Maybe it was somebody else. I don't know, but it was the first Google.
It's by Crystal Kadakia and Lisa Owens. They're the authors. They're the founders of Learning Cluster Design Model.
Yeah. Very cool. One thing I noticed about that is that just on the graphic that you had was the change behavior is actually on the left side, where we typically think of progressing, you know, across from left to right. But change on the job behavior is illustrated right there as the, I'm going to call it, almost looks like the starting point in a sense.
That's really it, right? I mean, when you're designing a learning program, you're sort of looking to change behavior on the job. What is it that the learner is coming in with now, and what is their ideal state, right? What is the goal that they need to reach? And yes, we've got our, you know, our Kirkpatrick's, we've got various different metrics to sort of track that. But at the end of the day, it's how do you get them to apply what they've learned on their job, right? And so you start with that and you sort of go through what are the different assets, what are the different learning mechanisms, right? Some folks are really good at auditory, some are kinesthetic, some visual, right? So how do you create that inclusive learning design to enhance that on the job behavior?
Mm-hmm. And just putting, it's implicit in what we often think about, you know, as our role, but changing behavior is what we're supposed to do, improving people's ability to do tasks, giving them the skills exactly. to do new tasks that they haven't done yet so that they can, you know, take on a new role, et cetera. So right away, I value that model just even as a visual of putting that there as opposed to what do people mm-hmm. need to know or what do we need to teach them. It puts the focus right away on the end goal. Going to definitely be doing some follow-up reading on that.
100%.
Yeah, I think I'll reach out to Crystal and Lisa and see if they want to come chat with us. And
yeah,
they're wonderful people.
Very cool.
Absolutely. Yep. Absolutely.
Yeah, for right sure. On. Hey, let's. Yeah. Let's take a stab at a couple of the other topics we were going to talk about today.
Yeah.
And maybe let's start with I know the diversity and the equity and inclusion that I talked about in the program or the description, I guess I'm trying to say the word I'm trying to find. Tell us a little bit about that and your experience. I was really, really intrigued by that in our earlier conversation.
Totally. Just before I jump into that, how do I close my screen share?
You should be able to again roll over your own vision. Your own video.
Yeah, I can do it for you.
Okay.
Oh, there we beautiful. Go. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Awesome.
A big part of our adjustment in all of this has been figuring out how all the small details of all of these different tools as we jump from one meeting tool to another, et cetera. So.
Oh, 100%. And I mean, if you think about it from a learning program perspective, the impact that those tweaks make mm-hmm. and the instructor's ability to know those tweaks before the class session starts, I think one of our most common challenges on WebEx that we had was people being unable to mute themselves when they needed to present their project. And it's like, we got 3 minutes per team to present and they can't unmute. And so we've lost that time in trying to get, you know, the platform to figure itself out. But anyway.
So just out of curiosity, let me change the subject just one more time. Do you guys use a producer? We've got some virtual training experts in the chat. And so we always talk a lot about the need for having, there's the presenter and then there's the producer.
We formally have a job title called producer, but they're very much on the design side, not on the delivery side. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, you're on mute. That's another famous line that we keep mm-hmm. hearing. Cool. So
yeah,
going back
sure.
to the DEI that you mentioned, right, Brett? So I guess that's a topic that's just been close to my heart since, you know, it became a thing, or even before it became a thing, and it was labeled diversity inclusion, later became diversity equity inclusion, all of which are inclusive and need to be labeled in there. I think my first sort of leadership role was in grad school, where I put together a diversity conference for the greater Boston area. So it was, you know, Boston University, Harvard, MIT, Babson, Northeastern, and a couple other schools who all sort of came together and said, look, we're like a massive school state here. We've got to do something, right? We've got to, you know, do some sort of collaboration together. One, to sort of break down the boundaries of, you know, you go to Harvard versus I go to BU versus, you know, Northeastern. We're all looking to solve the same sort of problems. We are the next generation leaders. So what are we doing to improve our community here? And so that was a really thrilling sort of experience to put together in collaboration with these other universities to put together a Boston-wide diversity conference. And so we had several folks representing different industries just coming in, and these were all diversity officers, right? they were all coming in, experts talking about initiatives their companies were taking, what, you know, students in these universities can do to help propel some of those initiatives, what challenges companies are facing, right? Where are the gaps in either recruiting or retaining diverse employees? And so that was my grad school experience. And I'm very, very thrilled that Visa takes diversity very, very seriously, especially in the past year with, you know, the George Floyd movement and whatnot. There was a lot of initiatives that our executives were able to launch into our sort of day-to-day, but also at a managerial level, right? Both my immediate managers, I kind of transitioned teams within the last year, both my managers sort of made it a point to sit down and have a conversation around, let's talk, right? Like, how are you feeling about everything that's going on in the world? And so just having those honest and open dialogues is so crucial to sort of just self-check with your emotions, but also keeping an open eye to what can you learn, what can you do better?
How do we integrate that into what we do as training professionals? Because like you just said, I mean, a lot of the value does come from just having those open, honest conversations at all the different levels. Is that something that we as the training team can come together on and create events or classes to facilitate that? Or do we have to teach the executives and the managers that they need to do that? But I mean, I don't think there's a right answer here yet or anything, but I'm just curious if Visa asked you when you were in your training role, if you could do something like that, because I do hear that quite a bit. I've been asked to do the DEI training and whatnot. And it's like, well, maybe it's more than that.
That is such a loaded conversation, right? I mean, it's such a great question because you're right. There is no right answer. I think some of the words diversity, equity, inclusion are a little subjective. And corporations are trying their best to sort of be as inclusive, be as open to taking these into consideration. So I guess a couple of things that come to mind. I think learning is absolutely the right hand to making sort of these, you know, we talked about changing on the job behavior, right? It starts with learning, right? When you're designing a learning program, make it an inclusive learning, right? If how many of the learning programs that we're actually putting out for enrollments, how many of them are, you know, for example, ADA compliant? You have folks who might be colorblind. How inclusive is your learning content for those folks, right?
And I was going to say, it's kind of like accessibility, right? It's kind of like we can absolutely weave it into the work that we're all doing with accessibility. 100%. And just, you know, and just make it part of our everyday jobs and how we create and do the instructional design that we do.
It's really, you know, just even as designers ourselves, even as learning professionals ourselves, we sort of take a step back and look at it from a holistic perspective of, you know, is this color palette going to be inclusive of everybody, right? Sort of having those self check-ins, I think, is really, really important to making sure that you're designing for learners. The other piece that I think is really important is having learners also be designers, right? So tapping into your audience and saying, come on this design journey with us. This is what we have. This is a very rough prototype. This is like a version one. It's ready to be tossed in the trash. Just what do you think though, right? And sort of having that open dialogue, I think, is very, very crucial to making sure you're sort of allowing the designers to learners to design a learning program that's essentially for themselves, really, right? That's one side of things. I guess the other side is, you know, 100% the executives do need to be trained on this, right? There is, fortunately, unfortunately, this top-down communication method. And so you can try all you want at the learning org level. You can try all you want with your learner, you know, audience. But if it's not felt at the top, if the impact's not felt at the top, I mean, your sell is going to be a little bit harder, right? So I think it's a two-way street. We don't always meet in the middle. I think we should. I think there's an opportunity to meet in the middle. And I think the learning team now has much more of an impact than we ever did. Right.
Yeah, for sure. Let's move on to that's. I'm also really curious. There's so many things that we can talk about. We're going to have to extend the conversation later. But as I keep looking at the clock, I don't want us to run out of time without talking about your transition into a different role and how that works. So we talked a little bit last season. One of our conversations was Mel Milloway, and we talked a little bit about her career and how she's transitioned into the customer experience side. And I know a lot of folks that are instructional designers often wonder, what's my next move? Where can I go next? What are some other people doing? So when you mentioned that, you recently moved out of your L&D role, I immediately thought, perfect, this is great to add to this conversation. So just tell us a little bit about that and where you're at now and what the new role is and how that came about.
Happy to. I think it's all about transferable skills, right? Especially if you're on the learning side, it's really beautiful because you're already talking to so many stakeholders. Right, so communication is a huge checkbox right there. When you're designing, you're already looking at all these inclusive, design mechanisms. But you're also looking at how do you create that on the job behavioral change? How do you reach the learning objectives of the program? And you've obviously got the skills, the technical skills of the tools that you're already using. So it's really taking that and saying, what more can I do with this? Right? What are all the frameworks that I've learned? What are all the tools I've currently using? And where's the opportunity for me to sort of make a larger impact? So I'm currently in the product innovation team. So I work directly with clients. The beautiful thing about that is I use the same exact frameworks I used in my previous role. The slides that I flashed up, I still use Agile. I still use design thinking. The learning cluster, sure, maybe not so much because I'm not in the learning role anymore, but, we're still sort of driving, our end consumers change, behavioral change through design thinking, right? So it's really still using those frameworks and saying, what is the impact that's possible here with these new design mechanisms, the new products that are available? So that's sort of how I view career change. Mm-hmm.
Do you miss it? Do you miss the training aspect?
Oh, 100%. I mean, the fact that I'm speaking to a bunch of learning professionals, I love it and I miss it. I very much miss it. I think the other beautiful piece about learning professionals is that we have a lot of empathy. We have a lot of empathy, and I'm not sure. I personally didn't know what to do with it. It was just, there's so much compassion for the learners to see them grow over time, to see them reach the potential that they're capable of because of the learning programs that we're providing for them. So I think really tapping into the compassion that we have for our audience, I think there's something there. There's mm-hmm. something there.
It's one of the best distinguishing characteristics of all of the people that I've met doing these types of L&D roles is the, that empathy, mm-hmm. the sense of, sense of caring and the sense of commitment too.
Absolutely.
There's nothing quite like, it's like being a teacher, right? I mean, in essence we are, but a lot of us are designers, don't actually deliver it. Maybe we do both. Maybe we do deliver it. But when you see that light bulb go on for somebody and you witness that learning moment, that's a really good feeling.
Oh, 100%. 100%.
Yeah. There's a couple of lingering questions about the transition, from your face-to-face to the online. Barbara's asking in the chat, how long were the online classes?
Great question, Barbara. They were 3 hours long. And we conducted the virtual class every other day, so to sort of give folks a break in between. The downside, though, of that was that it stretched to 2 weeks. It was still the same 40 hours. It was still the same 40 hours, but it was stretched out over 2 weeks. Mm-hmm.
And were folks then responsible for things outside of that online session as well? Like, was there homework or other things that they were doing in between those sessions too then?
Yeah, so the whole experience was really tied around that project that I mentioned. So they had time to sort of sit in on the classroom, the virtual classroom, learn about Visa, learn about, all the topics that we had for them. you know, once the session was done, they would sort of go group, do their group work. But they also had their day job, right? Training was just 3 hours out of their full workday. And so they were still working with their managers. So it was sort of really crucial to integrate those two experiences. I think one of the pieces of feedback we got from a learner was, my manager doesn't see me away from my seat in a virtual session, so they're constantly pinging me, how do I deal with this, right? And that was like a huge design issue that we completely forgot about. But you know, it's again in that narrative that our facilitators build to the learners, but also how does the learning team then advocate for the experience to managers themselves?
Very cool. Yep. I've heard of, you know, some organizations where with someone was taking an e-learning course, they, you know, had a little sign that they could hang on their cubicle or something, you know,
right.
I'm learning, or what, to signal to people that you were, you know, in that kind of a mode. But yeah, when we all spend our time in front of a screen and you can be seen, you know, in Teams or whatever as being available, et cetera, those sorts of things, it's hard to get the time to focus without interruption, and needing that support is pretty critical.
Mm-hmm.
Indeed, indeed. Well, I think we're approaching about that time.
Yeah, this has been a fascinating and wide-ranging conversation, and I think that, you know, lots of the folks in our chat are reflecting similar experiences about having to, you know, shift over from something that we were doing pre-COVID to things that we're doing post-COVID. And do you think the switch to the virtual, is it going to stick long term, do you think, or will, do you think Visa will go back to the face-to-face model of the original version of that program?
Great question. I think it's here to stay. It's funny because the feedback that we get from the learners is, oh, I wish there was food, or I miss the coffee when we could, you know, which I think it's a pain point that we all feel, right? Just that sort of face-to-face camaraderie. I think there's talks around, you know, making the last day when we do the project presentations, maybe in person, so people actually get to interact and do a little happy hour afterwards. So still retaining that culture, that team culture. But I think virtual training is just here to stay.
Yeah, it's going to be hard to shift the momentum back now, especially if this version of the program is still successful and achieving the goals. Then
totally
right. Yeah.
Momentum.
Well, speaking of happy hour, I think we're holding up our UK attendees from their happy hour, even though we're still drinking coffee on this side of the globe. But Shravani, this has been a fantastic conversation. Thank you so much for hanging out with us.
Thank you.
Can you go ahead and drop some links into the chat?
I did, and I'm pulling up my LinkedIn direct link as well, and I'd love to connect with folks on LinkedIn. Please send me a message. Please, just shoot me a request to connect. I'd be more than happy to continue the dialogue and keep my L&D fam very close. I don't want to lose track.
Awesome. Thanks so much for joining
us
here today.
It's
been a fabulous time. Lots of great info shared. Gang, thanks for joining us in the chat. As always, we have the best chat audiences.
Thanks, everyone. Take care.
Let's dance on out here.
Thanks for hanging out with us today.
All right.
We got a little music coming, but also don't forget next week. You guys should lock us in on your calendar. And don't forget to hit us up in our LinkedIn group. I almost forgot about that. I'm going to try to get better at doing that. So LinkedIn, hit us up, the idiotic group on LinkedIn for sure, and hang out with us. And then connect with everybody that you see here. And then we'll just keep continuing to have a great time. So we'll continue the conversation there. If anybody has any questions, drop in. And we'll go from there. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks,
Let's
everybody.
Go ahead and dance out of here in
Bye,
our last
everyone.
Few minutes.
Thank you.
Now. Adios, everybody.